My name is Eric Simon. I'm French. I've just been living for the last 4 years in London. I used to be a lorry driver. I've done lots of different, how can I say, employment and jobs. And how can I say that? I don't know how to say that in English, but I'm kind of a erudit. Is that correct in English? I don't know, which means I learn a lot of things by myself. And I've quit for a long time the mainstream media to learn about things. And yeah, so I'm writing a book, and yeah, that's it. I mean, life brought me in many strange positions and places, and meeting plenty of funny people.
So Eric, can you just give us an idea of, what made you switch out of the mainstream and start thinking, well, hang on a minute, because I need to start thinking outside the box more and to start actually actively going out and looking for things which are not mainstream?
Well, okay, but first of all, my own personal experience, for instance. So, let's say when I was a late teenager, I was very much involved because I was quit school. I was not going at school. I was a bit like, rambling in life like this, and I turned to get some experience about how sometimes police may well act, or people lean to underworld or crime, but very organized crime, and how judges, how politicians could be involved in that at a very early age. Then later, I wanted to get into the army, so I did a national service, 2 years, a long one, long versions, 2 years instead of 10 months. And I wanted to go to Yugoslavia at the time, back in the early 1990s. And then I ended up in Somalia. And how can I say, prior to going to the army, I had some kind of a fun experience which had me to leave my own country because I got myself into trouble. And the only way to escape powerful people, despite the fact that you wanted to inform the law, you find yourself having trouble with the law, and I'm not the only one who have experienced such thing. And so when I went to the army, I had my own experience. And by lucky chance, when I was in Somalia, I turned to, I don't know, sometimes being myself recruited by some officers who took me in the middle of desert in Somalia and telling me, okay, all right. Just to sum up quickly, let's say French operative in the French army working for the UN when investigating Saudi NGO, which my officer found out that was sheltered by the CIA, and that NGO was doing drug trafficking back in the early 1990s or mid 1990s to fund the fundamentalist Islamist in Somalia, Yemen, and all that, and very close to where that Saudi NGO was operating. It was just like very close to the Kenyan border in Somalia. And as you know, back in 1996 or 7 or 8, that was the first Al-Qaeda bin Laden, how can I say, terror attack on the US Kenyan embassy. So I turned very quickly to, be involved in things that you just don't see in the mainstream thing. You would just see that on your platform, probably, Tony, and,
Well, Eric, I mean, I have to ask about this whole Al Qaeda business because isn't it interesting how in France now the whole thing of just being a Muslim, for example, wearing a headscarf, is now not is now illegal. I mean, this just seems shocking to anybody from a liberal point of view, thinking of a free society that you cannot put a scarf around your head. Now this, so how does that link up? What's does it make any sense when the French authorities are both collaborating with the Islamic Islamist groups, terror groups, which certainly seem to be being kind of organized through the CIA, through the Saudi Arabians and people like that, that there's also stuff involved in domestic French politics, which is many people in the Western world see as pretty extraordinary to ban something as simple as a headscarf.
Well, I think that's the duality, I'd say, about, you know, it could apply for both French, and British politics at the same time, because we both know that French and British government have been involved in supplying Al-Qaeda and Al-Nusra group and all that in Syria and Iraq and, you know, mostly in Syria to destabilize Syria. But that's the duality of it. That's the fakery of politics. That's what I was mentioning, you know, why I was not listening to what these people were saying. We know it's all untrue, and it's just a way at the same time to keep people, you know, under kind of constant fear. And about the headscarf, or what we call, you probably call this as well, the hijab. It is not illegal at the moment to have that, okay, in France. But that's one of the things that Marine Le Pen wants to make legal in France, and in the recent presidential debate, you had Macron faking the fact that he was supporting Islam and all, when what we know about these people is like he's very much anti anything that's religious. He's more, atheist Ayatollah, if I could say that, something like this. But anyway, so yeah, that's a big problem about, and I think that tonight in this French presidential debate, I think Marine Le Pen made the difference in between saying this is not against Islam, but this is against what he's seen. And it is true in some ways in some parts of the Muslim world that some women are forced to wear this, actually. So she wants to ban this from public life. Okay, but at the moment it is not officially banned. And so she emphasized on the fact that it's got nothing to do against Islam, but what it is something against what she said, Islamism. Okay.
Well, yeah, but hang on. I mean, you've got a basic problem here, and that is, what if a woman chooses to wear it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I personally know some women I work for, and she was quite happy to have it. I'd say. And let's remember, back in the 1970s, I think one of the main promoters as a hijab, as a fashion item, was Barbara Streisand, if I recall well, you know.
And, well, there was another one, and that's Queen Elizabeth II. She wore a headscarf the whole time.
That's right. But, yeah, exactly.
But anyway,
exactly.
Look, I wonder if you can just get into some of the political differences between Macron and Le Pen. Now, the French system works so that usually you get a runoff. Either there's one person who wins very easily, or you get head-to-head, which is what's going on this week between Le Pen and Macron. So when is the actual vote, Eric? And can you just take us through the main political differences?
So in the UK, you vote at the same time for the MPs, okay? And then the first by the post, I think that's how you call that in the UK, can decide which MP is going to become the Prime Minister. That's not very much our system. We've got two different things, actually. We've got the presidential campaign to elect the French president, and then now it will happen in, I'd say, in about 2 months' time, then we will elect the MPs, okay? And I would say that sometimes the secondary election through which we elect the MPs is probably as much important as the president, because the lawmakers decide what's going to be voted or not, you know? So what happened is, like, 2 weeks ago, you have the first round, okay, and then get selected the two ones who reach the highest polls, okay, which are, that correct what I'm saying, yeah? And which was Macron and Le Pen. Then you got a second round, which will take place on Sunday, and then whoever wins is the president, okay. So in France, it is the French president who decides about a certain number of things. So he's got his own reserved, side of the French politics. But then he appoints the prime minister, and supposedly it is the prime minister who decides who bring to the supposition, not supposition, how can I say this, who bring a candidacy for being who's going to be minister. So finance minister, interior minister, well, that's what you call the Home Office.
Okay, well, anyway, look, this debate tonight, can you just take us through some of the main points? Because you sat and watched it, didn't you?
Yes, I just did, yeah. So literally, what is absolutely incredible that the French media are capable of doing is to have Miss Le Pen look like an absolutely undemocratic, fascistic kind of candidate. Okay, why she is proposing to establish within the French Constitution one of the most direct way to how can I say to have democratic expression, which is through referendum. So she is actually proposing to establish that would any kind of topic reach 500,000 signatories. Okay, French people deciding to bring that very topic before, you know, would they decide to choose one topic, and if you got 500,000 signatories, then the state, the executive power, would organize a national referendum regarding this very topic. So, for instance, it could be triggering Article 50 and leaving the European Union, for instance, because it has to be remembered that back in 2005, for instance, France decided by 55% not to join the European Union or the EU constitution. And it was through our so-called national representation, okay, which is the Assemblée Nationale, the lower room, and the Senate, our upper room, that it has been decided to absolutely disregard the decision of the French people, which has been obtained through the most direct democratic way, which is referendum, like you did with Brexit, which shows that politicians and representatives are not always on the side of the people. And so she wants to implement this, and she wants to implement that constitution. Change of constitution can only be implemented through referendum. So that is a major thing that could avoid, for instance, Macron to push France into a very dodgy Franco-German collaboration, which happened through the signing of the Aix-la-Chapelle Treaty back in 2019, or the Aachen Treaty. I don't know if you heard about this one.
No, tell us about it.
So the Aachen Treaty is a treaty that has been signed by Merkel and Macron, through which Macron allows Germany and France to speak on a diplomatic and a military matter as only one voice. So literally, this treaty allows Germany to have our seats, share our seat at the Security Council of the United Nations, and literally to have an option on anything that will be decided military by France.
So, okay, well, how is this business of Le Pen and her referenda going down? It sounds to me a little bit like they're borrowing this from the Swiss French, maybe.
That's exactly what it is. You know, it's what they call the Swiss have something called votation, which is like Swiss people are regularly requested to give their opinion on laws, on, you know, law proposal. And I think that's a very healthy way to exercise democracy, as far as I'm concerned. And what we would call like RIC, let's call it a referendum d'initiative citoyenne. So citizen triggered referendum in a way, was a big request from the Yellow Jackets, the Yellow Vest movement back in 2019. So it is absolutely, I'm sorry to say that, but despicable from the French press to have Miss Le Pen shown as a fascistic and democratic lady, while Macron, you know, shot at the people who wanted to promote this back in 2019. But these guys absolutely disregard the democracy in France. And when people express democracy, absolutely denies it. And another thing about Macron is that for years, he has imposed laws through what we call ordinances or executive orders. absolute disregard of the French lower room, the Assemblée Nationale, in which he already has something like nearly 65% just in itself, in himself, his own party. So literally, they really didn't care about any political debate at all. And it has to be remembered as well that if you take all the abstentions that happened when France elected their own MPs, Macron actually got 65% of the French Assembly, while he was only representing 16% of the electoral body. Okay, I don't know if that's the right expression. So that's very utterly concerning that Macron actually, if he keeps on like that, could have our constitution changed, blurred or diffused, I would say, in Germany or in Europe, just like that, with a flick of a finger. It's very, very utterly concerning.
Well, I think you'll find there's a similar kind of problem in Britain with the Conservative government. If you look at the percentage of the electorate that voted, it's actually far less than 50%, and yet they are the government, and that's the ones that actually vote when it came out to vote. But anyway, can you just go into a bit more depth about the difference between Le Pen and Macron? I think most of us understand that Macron is a globalist. He's very much an internationalist. He sees France's place as at the centre, keeping the European Union together, etc. He's also connected very much with the financial world, whereas Le Pen is more of a sort of separatist, a nationalist, who wants to actually leave the European Union. But what about other policies, such as the basic sort of financial policies, employment policies, whether they're interested in privatisation or nationalisation? What are the other aspects to their platforms that they're on?
Well, the Le Pen is shown as the supposedly far right. Politician. It is actually very funny to see that if you look at her program, you got something like about 74% of her program, or let's say 75% of it, and it's actually quite compatible with the one of the so-called left wing in France, because a guy called Jean-Luc Mélenchon, which reached just nearly as much as Marine Le Pen, a little below, I would say 1 point less than Le Pen, has actually literally something that has a lot in common with the so-called far-right program. So if you take, a big point through which you can see as well that what is called far-right is much closer to the people than elitist banker Macron, is on a kind of a tax matter. What he wants to implement is to lower taxes on small businesses, and she wants to increase, and that's never been done before, and she wants to create, financial speculation tax, especially for people who are making money in speculating in the stock exchange, And that is one thing that, indeed, as you can guess, as an ex-Rothschild banker, Macron doesn't want, So what Le Pen wants to do, she wants to keep the the age which people can get pension, can become pensioner at in between 60 to 62 years old. It depends on the career you had, and it depends on how difficult was the job you had. Like if you've been a miner or if you've been an office worker, it's not quite the same. And while Macron wants to, required people to get to up to 65 years old before getting into getting pension. So that's a massive thing in France. So that's another big difference, and which shows that actually the far right is a way more, incentive on the social matter than the so-called center, democratic center, which is absolutely not. And the other thing is regarding Marine Le Pen, so that could be seen as a more right-side type of politics. that she wants to install some kind of a national preference when it will come to work, to jobs, to getting public housing, when it comes to many different aspects of social life, like social aid, NHS money, or whatever the kind of benefit you can get from the state. So she wants to bring this first to nationals and then potentially later to foreigners. So that is one thing that on which indeed Macron jumps, just to say that Miss Le Pen is a kind of a Nazi-like person. The thing is, like, France over the last 20 or 30, 40 years has very much changed as well. And I shall say as well that there is a, the physiognomy of France has very much changed. And this as well is linked to Europe, indeed. So, and the fact that, there's a free circulation in Europe, and it's very hard to catch people trying to reach France to work. And it causes, as you just know, what we call, I don't know if you call this, this in English as well, some kind of social dumping, when you've got a lot of the, low wage workers and starting to work in France, for instance. So when it comes to...
This is a major thing in all countries in Europe. I mean, I've seen the so-called far right in Germany, who, I mean, they do seem to have a far right element, but they're mainly actually very normal middle class people, in fact, going out on the streets and marching against the EU migrants, because this has been a major policy for the last 30 years or so across Europe, is to bring in cheap migrant labor, to actually welcome it. It's been very much by the likes of Macron, by the people like Blair and Brown over here in the UK. Their argument was, well, this is really good for the economy. And yet what's happened is it's led to this kind of gig economy. The trade unions have been very much, almost destroyed, because they just don't have any power anymore. They can't, close industries. They can't go on strike because there's so many cheap migrant workers. We just had a P&O dispute where hundreds of the shipping staff were simply just sacked, and there's coach loads of cheap migrant labour sitting on the dockside waiting to take their jobs. This sort of thing does eventually boil down to people getting a bit fed up with so much migration, and also getting fed up with being branded as racist because they don't they want to keep their jobs. I mean, there's a whole, anyway, so I wonder, I mean, this is obviously the sort of thing which is being thrown at Marine Le Pen, and I just wonder what whether you think that she will be able to survive that, being accused of being such a racist.
Well, there's a main difference in what the journalists or that kind of progressive people within administration or within, the media and all that are saying, and what is actually actually felt by the people on the ground, in the country. They know this is happening. They're not listening anymore to this kind of disconnected elites. It could be the media, it could be the politicians. They are stuffed and fed up about all this, So... So I guess that, just like a bit like, the surprise that Trump created back in 2016, when everyone said, well, it would be Hillary Clinton elected, I think we could see the exact same scenario in France. And potentially, I'm not sure if she's going to get elected, but it could be very likely that this time, because it's been the same kind of battle as in 2017, it was Le Pen against Macron as well. But at the time, I think the result, if I recall well, was 66.10 for Macron and 34 something for Le Pen. But I reckon that nowadays, at least, we could reach a good, potentially, maybe I'm going to be wrong, but it could be a 55-45. And who knows? Maybe Miss Le Pen may just be elected as a president. Who knows?
Can you just explain a bit more about this Mélenchon guy and how he's influenced it? Who is he, and how has he been influencing the sort of swing voters?
Right, so Mélenchon, that's his name, Mélenchon in French, is a guy who's originated, like, that's my personal opinion, like many of the traitors of the working class on the left side of French politics. Okay, so he originated back in when he was in his youth in the usual Trotskyist movement. And you know very well as well, Tony, that it has been infiltrated and some of these movements have been created by the CIA, the Erwin Brown Network back in the 1960s. And that's exactly the type of thing of which this guy is coming from. Or ex-socialist prime minister who did not reach the second round in 2002. And there's a lot of these people who came from Trotskyist movement, some of them as early as the 1968 French spring, you know, back in 1968, and ended up in being supportive of Macron in 2017. So that's quite not Trotskyist to move from, you know, the very left wing to become the supporter of a Rothschild banker, you know, not quite. So actually, Mélenchon has the exact profile of that kind of person, you know, like the very one of the last, how can I say, head of the Socialist Party in France, who only achieved a mere 2.17%. The last first round of the French election. If you see that these people were elected as the French president, like French President Hollande was elected as a French president from the Socialist Party, okay, he's the one that introduced Macron, and only 5 years later, you've got the French Socialist Party who only achieved 2.17%. This is how much disregarded this kind of fake left. It's like you have Keir Starmer in the UK, is now regarded by French voters. So all the votes moved on the left side from the Socialist Party to a bit more left wing. I call him fake left wing, Mélenchon, who talks left. But as soon as the result of the first round on the French election, released, within 10 minutes, you've got that guy, Mélenchon. Who's, as I said before, whose program is 3/4 compatible with what Miss Le Pen says. So within 10 minutes, he said, okay, no vote for Miss Le Pen. And in a way, it's not been said like this because he doesn't dare to say vote Macron, but that's exactly what it means. Okay. He says, well, no, we need to block Miss Le Pen. However, whenever his program is 74% or 75% compatible with this one of Miss Le Pen. So what is this guy's game? One thing that we know is that this man, Mélenchon, proudly says that he's a member of the Grand Orient de France, which is the main Mason lodge in France, okay, of which all of the people from the ex, you know, Socialist Party head are part of. So you really see that there's some kind of betrayal. I'm not disregarding voters, people who voted for him. Not at all, okay? Because I have myself some kind of a left background and in a kind of, I'm a bit conservative, but on a social background, I think that protecting workers is a way to protect the nation as well, you know? So you can protect family as well if you protect workers because they can raise a family at the same time. But anyway, that's another story. So this is about Mélenchon. He's very, very concerning for people who, and there's a massive brainwashing for labeling Miss Le Pen as an absolute fascist. Well, when you look deep into the program, she's not that much of a fascist at all, except this kind of, as you explain, you know, she represents a lot of French people being fed up with that kind of soft invasion, thanks to the EU. So you asked me about EU and NATO, for instance. So Miss Le Pen, to look a bit more easy to the French voters, kind of put, as we say in France, put a bit of water in her wine. Okay, so she's not as strongly opposed to the EU as she was before, but she said it needs to be changed. And whatever is decided by Brussels, if we do disagree, we just don't care about what Brussels decides. The main problem is it is not quite a long-standing position if you remain in the EU. because you're going to get EU coercion on country, you know. So, and when it regarding NATO, he wants to quit the centralized command of NATO. She would still want to be an ally to NATO, but she wants to quit. So that's interesting, you know. And I am pretty sure that despite she put, as I said, a bit of, I don't know if you got the same expression in English, but she put a little bit of wine in her, water in her wine. I think that she's very much counting on the French citizen triggered referendum to ask for this question, okay, about being the EU.
Well, that's, it's interesting. What you're saying is that some things become politically impossible for leaders to do because of the power of finance, the power of media. And so she's saying, well, maybe the best thing to do is to just let the people decide these things. And then the finance people, the media people, can't really argue with that. So anyway, look, one of the most fascinating movements we've had in France with what was absolutely brilliant program they put together of social reform was the Yellow Vests, and they were kind of destroyed by COVID in a way. I think, you know, there was a big movement, big changes going on, Eric. Something quite exciting that the French do very well. The British tend to like sitting in their garden and sipping tea, whereas we like, you know, we see the French actually bothering to get off their backsides and go out on the street and make a change out on the streets. It's something the French are quite famous for in Europe, actually. So what's happened to the Yellow Vests, and how do their demands reflected at all, if they have been at all, during COVID and in this presidential election?
Well, you know, I think, and it's, and these people are still at work at the very moment, is I think what killed more than COVID, the Yellow Vest movement, indeed COVID happened. But, and this is something that is now worldwide known, it's called the Antifa movement, okay? Because at the beginning of the Yellow Vest, you had any type of French people. People, I think one of the big, one of the main topic that brought the Yellow Vest is that the French referendum that was stolen from the French people and most direct and democratic expression, which is referendum, back in 2005, was stolen by representative when Sarkozy, back in 2008, said, I'm going to go through MPs and Senate to actually acknowledge the Lisbon Treaty. It's not, it was not anymore the EU Constitution, it was the Lisbon Treaty. So I think the French people just really saw that as a main treason from the political class, because as just for Brexit, you had the left and the right all together to say, no, 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 we stay in Europe. So it was very much, just like the British, a very unpopular decision. So I think the Yellow Vest started from there. Then it linked up the fact that many pensioners could not even live with something like the very tiny pension of 800 euros or something like that when their rent is only 600 a month, you know. So you had pensioners, you had small business owners as well, on whose, how can I say, it's not tax evasion because it's legal, but for years and years, it could be the left and the right have just made tax evasion or tax legal evasion, let's say it like this. So they say tax optimization. Okay, for the main big stock exchange company or the big international companies. So for a long time now in France, all these kind of loss in the state budget, because these people, you know, make gifts for the very powerful and rich people, had to be borne, can I say that? Yeah, borne by the middle class and the small business owner. So in the Yellow Vest movement, you had people from the right, you had people who were unemployed, you had people who were working, but, you know, due to the cost of living, you know, like could be energy, could be rent and all that, were just fed up on not having a life and just like literally carrying on, you know, and struggling for living. But very soon, what, you know, so you had people from the right, far right, you had anything. Well, it's what is called now far right, which is not far right at all, as we've just described. But so it was really a genuine popular movement. So very soon, and the government and the police allowed these people to get into the protest, And with one thing, I don't know if you know about that in the UK, it's called what they call the Black Bloc. You don't know who these people are, but strangely, they were just allowed to be, you know, as most of the protests in France were at the beginning of the Yellow Vest, were not even declared, or, you know, the protest was not kind of legal because nobody knew. It was just like text message at the last minute to move something like 200,000 people inside Paris quickly, like within half an hour. That was just amazing. And the same in the, you know, in the other parts of France. So very soon, what happened is, like, they said some people were kind of infiltrated without the Yellow Movement and promoted by the media as leaders. They were not leaders. I don't know who promoted them as leaders, but they talk as leaders. And indeed, the media show them as leaders. And then these leaders started to declare to the executive power where the protests will be and marching from one point to another. So from that moment on, the police and the state and Macron knew where to stop the people, where to block people, and within some kind of a square controlled by the police who could come in and come out, okay, started to gas people to create anger and fight. Indeed, because people just wanted to leave, not even to fight, but to leave this big square. And where this happened, I don't know how to call this, let's call it a loop, something like in the march, you know, during the marching process. Strangely, that's exactly where the mainstream media were positioned, on top of the building, to show any, you know, violence that could erupt. They were begging for it. And when it was not happening, you had all these, you know, at some point in France or near the Champs-Élysées, you could not get near if you had just a yellow jacket on you, you know, high visibility jacket on you, okay? And everyone was searched. It was just unbelievable. And now you tell me that out of the blue, you've got 200 or 400 people called Black Bloc or Antifa with, you know, with sticks and all that could get into the marching protest and then start to fight the police. So from time to time, these people got rid of the real leaders of, or whoever did not suit the left-wingers or the Antifa, was called a fascist, or label as a right wing and blah, 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 kicked out of the protest. And these people, bit by bit, they took over the movement. So if you're a small business owner, you're not going to walk behind a 17-year-old disintegrated, can I say that, with no brain, people calling anti-fascista, anti-capitalista, and all that. You're not going to get decent, normal people behind these kind of, I wouldn't say lunatic, but just like brainwashed kids, you know. So time after time, the yellow jacket protest did not get very popular at all, you know. And that's, and then came the COVID as well. So from now, as there's no more COVID, for instance, and during this program, just after the first results of the, how can I say, the presidential election, there's been a lot of people marching against Macron from the so-called far right, trying to reach out the electors of that guy called Mélenchon, you know, we just mentioned before. And you know what? As soon as people, or just like during the COVID protest, when, for instance, I'm from a place in France called Lyon, and for a place like Lyon, where there's not mean much protesters, there was at least every Saturday two or three different protests, one from the right, one from the left. And whenever, by the, how can I say, the luck of the marching process, these two protests would gather and just join in one, you had out of the blue these Antifa thing erupting from nowhere and starting to punch one another, you know. And you, I was wondering, I said, who are these people working for? Obviously, they're working for the state. So that's very much the what, to me, killed the... And this is no disrespect for whenever you think right or left. As for me, you know, we should, you know, join together, you know, just like, you know, just like to fight against the purely on politics matter, or for our freedom through the COVID scam, you know. Right. Okay. Have I answered your question, Tommy?
Okay. So is there anything you'd like to add about the election and about French politics finally, Eric?
About French politics, I think it's a bit of a mayhem. I don't know what's going to, you know, come out as an outcome. What do I just want to say is, I can tell you myself that I never voted for Marine Le Pen or her father for my life. I kind of was a member of a union. I was an elected representative of workers. So I'd say I've kind of some kind of a left tendencies. However, I'm very patriotic, ready to fight for my rights and all. And I tell you one thing is that for the first time on the first round, I didn't vote. There's something I could tell you about the fake democracy we live in, because I'm going to finish just on this, but I want to come back on the fakery of the candidacy, or who is allowed to be a candidate in France nowadays. But I can tell you that from my background, I would call it myself, left Gaullist. You know, Gaullist was supposedly on the right side of politics, but I would be, the first ones who potentially joined General de Gaulle in London. There was a lot of left people. There was a far right people. So for the first time in my life, on the second round of this election, I'm going to vote for Marine Le Pen, and without any problem, because I really do not want another 5 years of Macron, because this guy is going to diffuse France into Europe. He's going to work. He's not working for France, and there's so many other topics that we need to prevent this guy from another 5 years. That's my point. And what I want to ask is that back in 2017, there was one candidate. And if I recall well, I think back in 2017, that party hosted Vanessa Bile, who came to give a speech on Syria at the time, okay, and supported this party, which is called the UPR, okay, and the leader is a guy called François Asselineau. So François Asselineau, at the time, in 2017, was the only candidate to clearly say that would he get elected, he would trigger Article 50 to leave the EU and instantly get out of NATO. Okay, he's the only one. So back in 2017, to be capable of, to reach candidacy, official candidacy for the presidential election, you needed to be backed by what they call the 500 godfather, let's say, which could be town hall mayors or councillors. You know, you needed 500 of them. Back in 2016, a very pro-Israeli, French prime minister called Manuel Valls actually passed a law, and everyone should very much question why he passed this kind of law. Banning anonymity for whoever wanted to give his parrainage, or his, in English, his backing to any candidate. So before this law, anyone who wanted to back one candidate and give his voice, or one of the 500 voices he needed, let's say, or vote he needed, okay, remained anonymous. And that guy, the prime minister, did this and banned the anonymity. So now there's a lot of people. So this candidate, François Asselineau, which is utterly clearly pro-Brexit and out of NATO, okay, did not get his 500 backings, I'd say, from high electors, as you can say, and he could not reach candidacy. So personally, I didn't go voting on the first round, just as a kind of protest. So you really wonder that now the state or the executive power can bring pressure, and who could allow one candidate or another to reach candidacy and being, brought to the light of the whole French people. Because once you're a candidate, it means that for a month, you could be Macron or someone who represents who is absolutely unknown. If you're a candidate and having these 500 backings, then you've got, by the law, you must have the same time on national media Macron could have, or Le Pen could have, or anyone could have. So that makes a big difference. And if you take the guy who, if you had one guy that could explain clearly why we need to get out of the EU and need to be out of NATO, with all the legal arguments and, you know, someone who's on the top of his brief, that was François Asselineau, which was prevented from being a candidate this time again. So that's another thing people should learn about the so-called great French democracy, you know, which is not, which is not.
Okay, well, fascinating. We'll see how things transpire this weekend, Eric. How do people follow your work? Is there anywhere that, you know, do you have a channel or social media that people can follow if they're interested?
Well, not at the moment. I'm starting some kind of a blog. Well, I can start. I just started to put video on Odyssey. It's still in French at the moment, but I will do some in English. And I need to get a bit more tech aware because I'm very bad into this. I don't even know how to start a blog or a website. But I just want to emphasize.
Well, I know. You were quite prolific on Facebook, weren't you? And you're one of those people that's being banned again and again. I think when I've checked your pages on Facebook, there's nothing there for weeks and weeks, and then suddenly you're back, you're doing a bit, and then suddenly you're disappearing again. So this is no way to run a blog. But anyway, thanks ever so much for joining us, Eric, maybe we can have a chat about French politics again in the future sometime.
Yes. Can I just tell about the name of the page on Odyssey? I just call it Roy Colin Roquebrune. So I'm going to explain what these three names. So Roy has nothing to do with Roi or King in French. It's got something to related to an SAS hero who fought Zionist terrorism back in Palestine in the 1940s called Roy Farron. And strangely enough, he participated in many SAS operations on enemy lines in France, in many areas that I know. So tribute to Roy Farron. The second name is probably someone I started to know through learning a lot of things through you, Tony, and it's a guy called Colin Wallace. Okay, so that's Roy for Colin and Roy Colin. And the third name is the name of a French captain of the French SAS during the Second World War, because a good third of the SAS were French during Second World War, and that guy and 16 of the French SAS were brave enough to attack 1,500 German, but there were only 16 on four Willys jeeps. And at the time when the French and British SAS were working together to prevent Nazi reinforcements for the both landing sites in south of France and north of France, you know, in Normandy. That's the name of the blog. Okay. And that's the kind of spirit I have. Let's see.
What's the third guy's name again?
The name is called, it's a bit long, it's called Captain Combo de Roquebrune. So the third name is Roquebrune. So the name is Roy Colin Roquebrune. So that's the name
of the blog. Okay. And how do you spell that?
Well, Roy, like R O Y. Colin as Colin Wallace. You know about Colin Wallace, Tony, do you?
I do, yeah.
And what a brave man he is. And Roquebrune is Roquebrune, like brunette, like rock brunette in some way.
Okay, Eric Simon, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome, Tony. Very much welcome.